The WLEW, News and Public Affairs Department, now presents What Do You Think? Here's your host, Craig Routson, with today's topic.
Good morning. Our guest today on the program is Julia DeGuys.
You sure did.
From the HDC, Human Development Commission. She is the Senior Volunteer Program Coordinator.
Manager.
And we're going to be talking about the senior programs, many of which are volunteer, but when we say volunteer, it doesn't mean necessarily there isn't some type of compensation for at least your travel time and such. So thanks for being with us today.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
You have a couple of senior programs. Mm-hmm. Which one would you like to start with first?
Oh, let's talk about the foster grandparents. We've had them in this area since 1978, and they've actually been around since 1965.
And basically, foster grandparents, we know what a foster program is. The foster grandparents are just basically a generation further beyond and helping out in the schools?
Yeah, foster grandparents are volunteers that work in classrooms, in schools primarily, and they work one-on-one with kids who are struggling to succeed. So, and they basically are in the elementary schools in the area.
And do they basically stay with a classroom or a student? Sometimes programs are individualized and sometimes they're more mm-hmm. of a classroom and they may wander about to whoever needs the help that mm-hmm. day.
Yeah, we kind of do that sometimes too. We have them in Head Start and Great Start programs as well. And we have foster grandparents mostly in the younger grades in the elementary schools. That's primarily where they are, and they stay in a classroom and they work with kids assigned to them, but sometimes some of the schools will have kids travel from room to room and the grandparents will sometimes go with them.
Oh, okay. I think that's a wonderful little kind of program. Do you've had people in this program for many years, haven't
mm-hmm.
you? I
mm-hmm.
mean, you're talking people who are working with their the kids of the
second generation. Yep, second generations. We are honoring one of our volunteers in Huron County this year for 25 years of service. So that's quite a feat. When she joined the program, you had to be 60. It was required by law to be 60. So that's, you know, 25 years. That dates her. That tells you how old she is, but I don't think she'd mind.
Does she end up getting retirement?
You know, that's the funny thing, because they're already on retirement when they come into our program, so this is kind of a bonus for them. Foster grandparents, they do receive a stipend for their service, and what that is basically, it's not really a wage. It's not considered income. We assume they're volunteering 20 hours a week. That's required, and we're assuming that it costs them something, and they're low-income folks to qualify to be on the program. We don't want them to be paying anything out of their pocket to volunteer, so they receive a stipend for their service. That's about $100 every 2 weeks, so that helps them.
And the low income is a good supplement. It's not just giving it to somebody who really just wants to do the program. You're actually gearing the program, so you not only help the kids, but you help the people who are helping you with the program through the volunteering.
Correct. That's what it was designed for originally, with those folks that were living on a very fixed income, and we know that they have a lot of experience to share. So we tap into that and we help them out too.
Now, how do people get involved in this? I mean, obviously you're going to be looking for people who have enough skills to help the kids, because, you know, you don't want them teaching them wrong. So
yeah.
It seems like there's got to be some sort of checks that, you know, you're able to, you know, actually be a benefit to the kids and mm-hmm. to yourself as you're doing.
Sure. There's an application process and a screening process for everybody that applies to be on the program, and you have to meet the income guidelines first and foremost, and then we do background checks on all of our volunteers. In fact, at HDC, all of the volunteers that are there have extensive background checks done. We go through the state police criminal background checks. We check the state and national sex offender registries. We check the Department of Human Services registry. With the foster grandparents, we also do an FBI fingerprint check on them.
And that's important, because you're dealing with kids.
Absolutely.
And kids, we protect them. This may all be done in school, but you still have to err on the side of caution. And there's
mm-hmm.
rules that, you know,
mm-hmm.
all the programs have to follow anyway. But
yep.
But it's there for a purpose, and it's not to besmirch anybody coming in and make them fearful. Oh, what are they going to find out about me if you haven't done anything?
That's
there's
right.
There.
That's right. You have nothing to worry about. So. Yeah. So, and when we ask the people when they're applying for the position, we will ask what kind of experience they have working with kids. You know, if they like working with kids, you kind of have to. And classrooms today are really kind of a challenge, more so than they used to be. They're very much more busy than they were when we were in school, where you sat in your chair and you really were quiet. They're not like that anymore. You know, and you have to be ready for that. You have to have patience. And you know, I have a couple of grandparents that didn't have children of their own. They don't have grandchildren. They're probably some of the best grandparents that we have. So, works out no matter what.
Well, you know, some of us don't have kids, and maybe that's the way to go. Because I know my parents always, when the grandparents came over, they were never like they were with us. So, I imagine give them a chance to give them that attention that they really want.
Yep.
And the program, is this funded locally? Is there a national fund? Because a lot of the state and national funds have been drying up for a lot of programs lately. Is it getting harder and harder to keep programs viable?
Yeah, this is a nationally mandated program. Like I said, it has been around nationally since 1965.
And it doesn't mean they won't cut the funding.
Well, they actually have.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we also receive a great deal of money from the state of Michigan as well. And again, you know, we've had some funding reductions through there too. So, but we're still here, and hopefully we'll stay. But we've had our challenges, and we've learned how to do more with less.
I think most organizations have had to do that.
Right. And we do receive funding from United Way in all three of our service counties, but we receive it here in Huron County, and our schools do support us as well.
You mentioned before the program, they supply lunches and such, so that when the foster grandparents are there, they don't have to do that out of pocket. All these
right,
things.
right. And the schools will support with cash if they can, so.
Okay. If people want to volunteer, is it a long process? It sounds like with the background checks, there might be weeks and weeks. Do you need to start now if you want to go into the fall? Or?
Well, we're not placing new grandparents right now. It's close to the end of the school year. So we'll wait and place in the fall. But people can apply anytime. And
you can get the background check
absolutely,
part out of the way. That way, you know, you're set to go.
And then we do a training. We do a pre-service training. We try to get that in before they actually start. It's like a whole week of training where we teach them things that they need to know being in the classroom. They also have to do what we call job shadowing for 20 hours. So they have to be with another grandparent for 20 hours. So that's something that can get done ahead of time as well. So, the background check process, though, sometimes it takes just a couple of hours. The fingerprint process is almost instant. Lots of times we get it back before we even get back to our office after having it done, depending on how quick they get through the system, because it's done digitally, so it's all done really quickly. So, and the other background checks are primarily online, and then one takes maybe a couple of days. So it's a quick process.
Not like the old days where they had to put them on a card and send them in. And
I remember doing that when I first started. Yeah, when we had to do background checks, it was like we had to wait until we had so many and then send it off to the state and wait for it to come back. And yeah, it was long then.
The program, is it basically one foster grandparent, one foster grandkid, or do they work in a classroom maybe? And if they see another kid struggling, they move over there for a time. It seems like a big resource to, you know, that, you know, if the foster child you're there with is doing fine on this particular lesson, you can help someone else.
Yeah. Typically, what we do is we speak with the teacher at the beginning of the school year. The teacher will identify, two, three, four kids in the classroom who have specific needs and what the grandparent needs to do to help that child specifically. But they're in a classroom with 25, 30 other kids, of course they help all the other kids. You know, you can't have a grandma in a classroom and not have that person be grandma to everybody. So they do focus some of their time with specific kids, but the rest of the time they're there for everybody.
And is continuity important?
Absolutely.
The same foster grandparent is visiting the same class all the time because that's how connections are made.
Sure, they're assigned to specific classrooms, and if they need to have them in more than one classroom, then they're assigned to the specific classrooms. A lot of the kids that our grandparents work with don't have a lot of continuity or stability and in their personal life or at home or whatever. The grandparents are always there for that child, and that's the one thing by the end of the year you see more than anything is that child will oftentimes perform better for the grandparent than for anybody else because they've got that one-on-one attention and they've built a relationship and they're able to do more with grandma there or grandpa. I don't want to say just grandma because we do have grandpas too.
both are valuable to,
absolutely,
to kids as they're growing, mm-hmm, up. And all of the activities are done in school as part of a classroom activity.
Correct.
There's no extracurricular,
no,
outside of that, beyond that. So it's only school times that, mm-hmm, the people need to volunteer for. And it's like 20 hours a week, you were saying,
yes,
something like that.
Yeah.
So it's not a lot of time. And it has benefits for both the giver and the receiver.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Gives grandmas a reason to get up in the morning. I think that's the biggest thing that they tell us. It gives it. They feel good. They are making a difference in a child's life. And they can see that. That's, I think, probably the best thing. And it gives them something to be healthy for, to stay healthy, so that they can keep coming.
Do you work to place them in a school maybe where they don't have their own grandkids, that type of thing? It would seem to me that'd be difficult in the class if this really is grandma and everybody else, it's, you know, foster,
yeah,
grandma.
I don't know that we've ever had any placed in the same classroom, but we place them as close to their own home as we possibly can. And of course, they've got grandkids in the area. Of course, there's going to be grandkids in the same school. But I don't believe, to my knowledge, we've never had them in the same classroom. And so if we have, it's not really been an issue, because I've never really heard much about it. So,
terrific.
Yeah.
So that's one of your major programs. Mm-hmm. The other one you wanted to talk to us about was some more of that alphabet soup that,
sure,
organizations are all about.
We're
these
big
days.
On that, right.
RSVP. And
yeah,
that's usually you get that with an invite and,
mm-hmm,
you've got to respond to it. What's, mm-hmm, RSVP mean for seniors?
It is Retired and Senior Volunteer Program. And it is, we usually go by RSVP because it is much easier to say, obviously. And it is your invitation to serve. RSVP is a volunteer program for folks 55 and older, just like the foster grandparent program, but there's no income qualification. There's no specific place that they have to serve, and there's no specific number of hours that they have to serve. Those expectations are not there. They're basically volunteers in the community that do things that the community needs to keep functioning. They work in nonprofits and in schools, and we have them at our agency to deliver home-delivered meals. They work senior transportation. They take folks to doctor's appointments. We've got a couple of newer programs that we're getting off the ground right now, if we want to talk about those.
It seems the first programs we talked, mm-hmm, about, foster grandparents, that's for seniors who live here year-round. This program, you could be a snowbird and still take advantage of some of the programs in the times that you are here.
Absolutely.
So this would fill in the gap for the people who are,
mm-hmm,
who do go south.
Sure. Or who don't want to make a 20-hour a week commitment either. That makes a big difference too. But I do have a lot of snowbirds in the RSVP program. And the fun part is that where the snowbirds go, there are RSVP projects there too. So if they want to stay involved year-round, they can.
Oh, do you coordinate with the continuing
sometimes we do
groups down,
mm-hmm,
there? Or?
Yep. Sometimes we have done that, but usually we just tell them how to get a hold of them down there. If they want to be involved, then they can do that on their own. So these programs are both national service programs. They're across the country. They're everywhere. So.
Okay, yeah. And what type of programs you offer? I know you wanted to talk about Homework Heroes. That was,
yep,
one of them. That seems like it's a little beyond the foster grandparent type of thing.
It's a little bit amped up from the foster grandparents. It's specific tutoring and mentoring. And we're really going to focus, this is brand new. We're just now getting this off the ground. We placed our first volunteers down in Tuscola County a month and a half ago. So we really want to focus these volunteers in upper elementary to middle school. And I can see a continuation here of kids that have had foster grandparents in the lower elementary. And if they still need help, then we might be able to assign a homework hero to them as they go up into the higher grades. Homework heroes are really focusing more on specific needs for a specific child. They won't probably necessarily be assigned to a classroom, to a teacher, but they'll be a school-based volunteer where they'll be used at wherever they're needed, at whatever time they're needed. And of course, the volunteering is based on when the volunteers want to be there. So if they're going to be available one morning a week or whatever, that's what they'll do. And they'll work specifically with kids on tasks that they're struggling with. Again, like the foster grandparents, but maybe the time commitment won't be as long. It might be a little bit more involved, the work that they're doing with them. A good example that I use to kind of help explain is if a child struggles with spelling, because that seems to be an issue. Of course, with spell check anymore, it's not as big an issue as it used to be. But
we depend on those things too much.
Yes, I think you're right.
We're already losing penmanship,
mm-hmm,
and
sure,
writing cursive.
Sure. Sure.
And spelling is, I think, the next thing. When I went to school, you, mm-hmm, couldn't use a calculator.
Mm-mm.
They would even take away your slide rules, and most students today,
what is a slide rule? Yes, what is that?
You couldn't have that in an exam, and now, mm-hmm, they're everywhere.
Right, and that is what it is. So, but Homework Heroes can work specifically with kids who struggle for example, like with spelling, if they're taking a spelling test on Friday, maybe they'll have a hero assigned to them to help them with that spelling project. Or maybe if they're struggling with a concept in math, or maybe they just don't do well in science. You know, not every kid is really good at everything. They just struggle a little bit, and that's what these heroes will be for. But they're also mentors. So they're if a child has some self-esteem issues or maybe just needs that connection. The Big Brothers Big Sisters program had a lunch buddies program where they had volunteers that would go into schools at lunchtime and spend time with kids who just needed that connection with another adult with a safe, caring environment. That program is no longer around. They closed down a couple of years ago. So we kind of look at this as a cross between a lunch buddy and a foster grandparent.
And do you have to have specific skills to take part in this program? And, you know, if you're going to be helping somebody doing math, it seems to me you'd have to be a little proficient in it as well.
Right.
You don't want to teach them wrong. It's harder to unteach something
Absolutely.
Than to teach them right the first time.
Yeah, and we do look for volunteers that do have a little bit higher skill level in certain areas to be the tutors if they're going to be tutoring specifically. But if they just want to tutor general and be a mentor, anybody can do that.
Spelling, you know, you have the word in front of you and you help them spell it out,
right.
try and sound it out or whatever.
Right.
But when it comes to math, you either know it or you don't.
Right. And a lot of kids struggle with actually getting their homework done, with focusing and getting their homework done. So we see a homework hero as somebody who can help do that. Like maybe before school starts, you have the kid come to school a half an hour early or whatever, or at lunchtime, or during a recess period or a break period during the day where a hero could sit down and just help that child focus and get their homework done. Maybe they have no problem with the work itself, but they just don't get it done.
And there may be problems at home that distract them, that they don't get the work done, and you know, that's a whole different issue that
that you
can't solve with the homework hero, but at least they can get the homework done before
right.
they get to class, and they don't have to deal with, no, I didn't get it done
right.
again.
Right. So that's one way you could use a hero. So.
And if people want to volunteer for that, about how much time a week do you think that one's going to take?
That's going to be up to the volunteer, I think, and it's going to depend on what they're willing to give. And again, this particular project, we're looking at volunteers that really want to give more than just an hour a week. But I wouldn't say more than 3 or 4 hours a week.
And it's all done in the school.
Mm-hmm.
There's no off-campus activity to this, so... It's going to be limited by the time the kid has at school where he's
right.
not in a regular classroom to begin with.
Right. We're hoping eventually that maybe by next year, if we have enough heroes established and working with the schools, we might be able to do some summer work with kids that just have a hard time catching back up again in the fall. Because I know schools, sometimes they have someone available, a teacher could be available to help, you know, just direct the volunteers a little bit. So this isn't something that has to be limited, but right now, because we're so new, it is.
Yeah, I hear a lot of teachers say they forget so much over the summer that I take the first 3-4 weeks of school just to catch them back up to where they were when they left.
Yep. So, and there are some kids who struggle with that more than others, and this would be a great place to use a homework hero to help get that kid caught back up before school starts.
And so. Are the age differences in this? Do you have to be a retiree or just what counts as a senior, you know?
Yeah.
You can go to different restaurants and 55 at one, 60 at another,
right.
65 at another. What is your guidelines with the funding and all the rest
right.
of it?
And I've been an ARP since 50, so you know that's where that goes. 55 and older for this program. And no, you don't have to be retired. If you have time that you're available to give, you don't have to be retired to be this volunteer. So.
And it doesn't take a lot of time, but it makes a big benefit for the kids.
It does. It really does. Then on the other end of the spectrum, we have the Safe Seniors program.
Where you're not helping the youngest, you're helping the oldest.
Exactly. And it's the same group of volunteers, those that are 55 and older. And what we do with Safe Seniors projects, there's two different arms to it. One is the KISS program. That's keeping independent seniors safe.
I'm
we do love our
that.
Letters.
Glad you said that because that sounded like that could get risque and we didn't want
to deal
there.
Nope, we're not going to be doing that, no. But it is keeping our older adults safe. And we look at folks that live alone who are isolated, don't have a lot of contact necessarily with the outside world, but there is a codicil to that, and we'll talk about that too. This is a telephone reassurance call, okay? And it's the volunteer, and our volunteers call from their own home, so it's not like they have to get up and drive to an office and make these phone calls. They call from home. And they'll call the person, the customer, either every day or every other day or whatever has been arranged. We arrange it ahead of time, and the family's involved and so on. And they'll call just to make sure they're up, make sure that everything is okay. What happens a lot of times is folks will fall or they become ill, or we've had folks, not in my program, but they pass away. And if we're not calling to check on them, it may be days before they're found. So we don't want that. So we offer this phone call system. And if our volunteer calls someone and they don't answer the phone, we have a system in place, an emergency contact system in place for that direct person specifically. And the volunteer then starts calling emergency contacts, the family member or a neighbor or whatever, to go and check on this person. If we don't get anybody from the contacts, we'll call for emergency help.
I know years ago here at the station, we had a lady who would call just about every day and ask us, what day is it and what time is it?
Mm-hmm.
And we get them about the same time, and we always figured there was some caregiver coming over and she wanted to let them know that she knew what day and what time it was. So she'd call us, and she may not have been able to remember the day, but she knew how to get around it.
Sure.
But at least somebody was checking up on her, and it was kind of neat.
Sure. And we usually target those folks who are isolated and don't have any really means to get out and go places. However, we do have customers that we will contact who are capable, who are mobile. They get up, they're fine, they get up, they go out, they come and go, but they live alone, and they have a fear, a concern of something happening to them during the night, and this just kind of gives them that little bit of security. And what's wrong with that?
I know the Meals on Wheels types of programs, mm-hmm. that also is similar to this in many ways. When mm-hmm. they give them the meal, they have a little socializing, they get a mm-hmm. little talk back and forth, and they're not quite as isolated and alone.
Correct.
as they were before, mm-hmm. and they see that they're doing okay.
Sure, exactly. And we can actually supplement that program by checking on those very same people on the days that there aren't meals being delivered. So we can offer that, and we have done that.
So if they're getting checked every day by the meals, maybe just on the weekends and the days that it's snowing and you can't get the meals out.
Right, and the meals don't go out every day. So the days that they don't, like Wednesdays and Fridays, they don't go out. So we can call on those days if that's necessary. So
you tailor the program to meet what already services they're getting.
Absolutely.
Because you don't want to waste funds and people's energy to do double duty.
Exactly. And the best thing about these programs with RSVP is that they're designed to meet each individual community's needs. Like the Homework Heroes is going to meet the school's need. I'm not going to walk in there and say, here's a volunteer and you have to do this, 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 and this with them. It's not up to me. It's up to the school. With these programs, it's what is the need in this community? What is the need in that community? What does this person need? And we're very, very flexible that we're able to do that. Not a lot of programs can do that. But we're designing it specifically for our own communities.
And a rural community is far different from an urban community, where we have more, you know, transportation issues.
Correct.
Because people are farther apart, where, you know, if you're in a city running a program, you just have the city streets and everybody's connected that way.
Right. And with the Silver Companion program, which is the other part of the Safe Seniors, because of the isolation out here and the distance, a lot of people are alone, much, much, much more alone than say someone who lives in a city where there are people right close by. And if they don't have a way to get out and about and around, they stay by themselves and they are alone. So the Silver Companion program is basically a friendly visiting program, just exactly like it sounds. If you think about if you've ever had surgery, and you're home and you're alone, maybe your family is out for the day or whatever, and you can't go anywhere because you're not allowed to drive or you can't or whatever, just for a few days, and you can kind of sit there and go a little stir crazy. Well, imagine if that's your life every day, you know, and who wants to live like that, and who wants to think that there are people out there living like that? So that's what we do.
You can think of it like when your car is in the shop.
Mm-hmm.
You may not be going anywhere. You may have no plans to do it, but just knowing it's not out there, that if you needed it, you could go.
Correct.
It really can freak you out a little bit.
It can, and just imagine if that's your lifestyle. So it's our that's the purpose for our program is that nobody needs to be alone.
And how many visits, how many times a week do you, is that based on what the volunteer wants to do, what the person needs?
Both. Yeah, it is completely up to the volunteer and the person that they're working with. And what we find is that when they start this program, they may visit once every other week or so, or once a week, but they end up developing a relationship where it turns into something more frequently than that. Some of our companions, they provide a service. Like if they're going to the grocery store, they might just call up a person and say, well, I'm going to the store. Is there anything you need? I'll pick it up and bring it to you. You know, that kind of thing too. So we have found with our KISS program, when someone starts calling somebody, that eventually, very frequently, turns into a visiting situation too. So, you know, we watch that they don't get too attached to each other, because that could be a whole bunch of issues that we don't want to really want to get into. But we just want to take care of people that are alone.
Do you, as the people come into these programs, not the volunteers so much, but the people they service, do you run them through the whole introductory tour through the HDC. Maybe they need home cleaning services mm-hmm. that can help, or you know, all, there's lots of other things sure. that can help keep them in their home and keep costs down for them and for society as a whole, really.
Absolutely. That's part of the purpose of this program. And most of our referrals come right directly from in-house, from our own senior services staff that are doing the in-home work, the personal care, the homemaking, and so on. We get a lot of referrals right from them. So, and those that don't come from them, we make sure that they get the information. But part of what our volunteers are trained to do, because we do a training. We don't just say, okay, well, here, go call this person.
Yeah, you gotta give them some guidelines.
We have a pretty involved training, and if the person that they're visiting or calling has questions or concerns, that's part of what they're doing, is listening for that and offering, well, we can see if we can get you some help, and then they'll call us and we just go from there.
Does it get frustrating? Because I know there are some people who wouldn't accept help, and you know they're lonely, but this all has to be volunteers on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
The one whose house you're coming to and the person who's coming there both have to want to have this going, or it doesn't work.
Absolutely. Yeah, we would never force it on anybody. Yeah,
well,
this
I mean,
is pointless.
You really
yeah.
can't, but I mean,
right.
you know, it must be
yeah.
heartbreaking it's when you know people would benefit from having
yeah.
having some companionship, but, you know, they either are too proud or cranky, or maybe just don't feel good and don't want to have people around.
Yeah, that's part of it, I think. A lot of times we'll come across somebody who they feel that they're coming to the end time, and they just want it to happen, and they just want to be there, and they just want to be left alone. And that is frustrating, because we just don't like to see that, you know, but it's their choice. And sometimes people are real hesitant to let a stranger come into their house, as they should be, you know, which is why we really try. We don't just send someone out to somebody's house. We go with them, and we will have made contact with that person ahead of time. We don't do either of these programs without family involvement, if there's family around, or even contact if the family doesn't live nearby, so that we're not just walking in the door saying, hey.
So there's an introduction done mm-hmm, with mm-hmm. people from the HDC, everybody together, when this,
sure.
so you can see if it's going to click or if
right.
there's a little friction going on already.
Yep.
Do you try to do male-male, female-female, just
yes.
Yes,
we
to
do.
Get a closer bond rather than something amorous?
That's not in my book.
Oh. Yeah, I didn't see that.
No,
that's
not, one
wondering.
Of the services that we provide. So, yeah.
But, I mean, you know, things
yeah.
click and people are lonely
sure.
and old
mm-hmm.
and they want to
yeah,
get together. And,
yeah.
and when you're together all the time, things, you know, but
yeah.
if you're doing it the other way, it,
yeah,
it's
typically
less likely.
We typically set up same-sex arrangements. So, yeah. Yeah.
So she has, if it's a woman, she has a girl coming over to
mm-hmm.
to chit-chat with.
Yeah.
And if a guy, and you got a guy to play cards with or something.
Yep. And that's usually what they're asking for anyway. So that's what we do.
Okay. Are people in the Silver Companions or KISS program compensated for travel?
If there's money available in the budget, we can do that.
And
of
we
course
all know
our,
how
yeah,
budgets are
our,
today and funding.
Our budgets are, yeah. Of course, we've all struggled with our budgets, so...
But then again, if you can get enough volunteers that they're close enough,
mm-hmm.
it's not as big of a
right.
A,
that's
a
yeah, that's
hardship
what that's what we
drive.
Certainly try to do is find somebody close by. So yeah.
So when you don't have funds, the things you need to do are fundraisers.
Absolutely.
And that's another thing you wanted to talk about while
sure.
we're here.
Sure.
Because
yeah.
you've got something coming up here, and I think it's a spelling bee, if
it
I
is.
See correct.
Yeah, Spellmasters 3.0, and it's called 3.0 because it's the third year that we've done it,
oh.
and it will change every year as we go. So it's a spelling bee, and we are holding one in each of our service counties, which is Tuscola, Huron, and Sanilac, and then the winners of each of those bees will get together and compete to be the Tri-County Championship of our Spellmasters.
And who competes? You just come up with a team on your own and you
yeah.
register? It's
yep.
it's not, you don't mm-hmm. have to be part of any of these programs.
Nope.
You just
it's anybody who really wants to support our programs or just wants to have a fun evening, because this is a spelling bee, but it's not like what you would think. You don't get up and talk in front of everybody and stand there and spell a word, so nobody has to worry about being embarrassed.
It's not the Geico commercial with the farmers.
Yeah, we don't do that. Oh, that's a good one, though. I think, yeah, that'd be fun. So, no, these are teams of four, and the teams compete against each other, and we have a word master who reads the word out, and then each team gets a chance on their own to write it down, and they decide how they want to come to agreement on how a word is spelled. There's different ways that they can do it, and then time is up. They're given a certain amount of time, and then each team has to give their word, how they've agreed to spell it, to their judge, and then we decide if they spelled it right or not. If they did, good. They can go through on to the next word, and there's three rounds with 10 words in each round. And there's a final round, which is the elimination round. But in the first three rounds, if you spell the word incorrectly, you can still stay in, but you have to buy that word back for $10. So you can stay in as long as you don't misspell every word.
And how many on a team?
There's four on a team.
So at least 25% should be a smarty pants.
Well, you know, you look for that. You look for somebody who really knows what they're doing. So, and people that can agree, because I've seen teams that just couldn't agree on how to spell a word, and they get down to where you have to turn your word in, and they don't know which one to turn in. So, yeah.
Do you have to confiscate smartphones so they're not Wikipedia-ing this?
You know, I didn't even think about that. But last year we had a word that was challenged, and I didn't have my dictionary with me, and I'm not sure why. I left it at the office. So somebody pulled their phone out before I could even say anything. They had, oh, well, look here. And I didn't even think about that. So, yeah, that's part of our rules now. It's like, please leave it in your purse or in your pocket or whatever.
There's not a spelling bee app out there that they're going to
Sure there is. Sure there is, because that's where I get my words from. So.
Oh.
So, yeah, I select the words, and I have somebody else who looks over the list as well. So it's not just me. And, we just find really good, challenging words. Online, there's all kinds of spelling lists out there. And I really kind of look at all of them.
Because you can get a word like color. Mm-hmm. And in England,
it's
has
with a U.
U in
mm-hmm.
it.
Yep.
And it's like, it's color. And
sure.
It's like, which do you go? They're really both correct.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have a dictionary that says this is the standard we're using, Webster's standard or whatever. So you've got
right.
one basic
right. And I do. That's what I've got. And I go through all the words that I find. I make sure they're in the one that I have in my hand, and that's the final answer there. So, you know,
What kind of words did you use last year?
Well,
how big are they? Are people going to get scared if it's, you know, if it's something like, you know, supercalifragilisticexpialidocious, that's going to be like, I didn't see the Disney picture.
That's not really a word. So, yeah. Actually, the word that got challenged was supersede, and it's spelled S-U-P-E-R-S-E-D-E, but people spelled it with a C, C-E-D-E, which is not really correct, but has been spelled incorrectly for so long that it's considered to be correct, and how sad is that? So I had to give on that one. Had to give it to him. So,
oh man,
yeah.
This is what we're coming to. Even our errors are becoming correct.
Well, my son
if it's done long enough.
My son always tells me that English is an evolving language, and you just have to deal with it. And that's not, you know, I can still see Mrs. Harp in the second grade. This is not evolving. This is how it's spelled. So, yeah. Some of the words that we had last year, hierarchy was a word that caught a lot of people up, and occurrence that end with an E or an A there in that last. The last one, accommodate.
I imagine words with like IE in them,
mm-hmm.
because sometimes, you know, the rule is, you know, it's the last
sure.
vowel,
yep.
but it isn't hard and fast in English.
Yeah.
You can get stumped with that one.
Well, there's a lot, almost
Stein
more.
Stein and Steen
yeah.
all depends on which vowel
yep.
is last, but
yep.
In other words, it's, mm-hmm. it's, they may be based on a French word or a German word somewhere, and they did it the other way.
Yep. And there, you know, this is the, this is the first round, and each round the words get a little bit harder. So this is the first round from one of last year's. So, you know, they may seem kind of easy, but, you know, even when you're sitting there with three other people and you think you know what you're doing, you really might not. So, or you might really know what you're doing, and the other people might not, and they might convince you that you're wrong too. So
you were saying before the show here,
yeah,
you actually witnessed that.
I did.
Once.
Yeah, it was funny because this one competitor, I knew she knew what she was doing because she's an incredibly smart lady, and I watched her write. I forget which word it was, but I watched her write it down. She wrote it down correctly, and her teammates all wrote it down, and they all wrote it incorrectly, but they all wrote it the same way. And they convinced her that they were right, and she was right, they were wrong. So they had to buy that word back. But yeah.
Well, three of them had to buy it back. I don't think she was going to pay for it. It's like you
yeah.
three buy it
it's
back.
It's like one of
I
you,
right.
yeah, one of you pay for it. So yeah. So, yeah, the sergeant is one that tripped up almost everybody. So that was a good word too, and that was just in the first round. So the winning words from last year, we had assonance was the winning word in Tuscola County.
I don't know if you can say that on the radio.
You can, actually. I looked that up, okay?
What does it mean?
It means resemblance of sounds and words.
Okay.
And internecine was the winning word in Sanilac County.
Sounds like a drug.
It's internecine. It's actually struggling within a group. That's what we witness at these events. So the year before, the first year we did this, inchoate was actually the winning word, and that inchoate was a perfect word to win on because it basically is not being fully developed. And that was our first year. So, of course, the whole thing was we were just in the stages of really developing what it was going to look like. So, obsequious was a winning word last year. I like that one. Of course, that's kind of, you know, fawning and, you know, people know what that word is. They don't know how to spell it.
Nothing to do with Elton John's wardrobe.
No. No. No sequins in that one. Then the championship word last year, the overall championship, was won by a group from Huron County, from the Weary Word Warriors. Weary Word Warriors from Huron County. And they're back this year, so we'll see how well they do. Their winning word was odoriferous. And that's exactly what it sounds like, but they were the only ones that could spell it.
And by your rules, last year's winner always coming back. Mm-hmm. That's how you set mm-hmm. up the rules for year after year.
Correct.
After year.
Correct. Yes, there's an entry fee, a mm-hmm. registration fee of $100, and most of the teams will find a sponsor to pay for that. And then, of course, the words that you want to buy back if you want to stay in until the final elimination round are $10 a piece. But the winning team in each county gets to come back without the registration fee. So they get to come back as the champions from that county. So.
And try again next year to hold on to your title.
Absolutely.
And what do you get for the title other than a twisted tongue?
A trophy. You get the trophy in the honor of being the spellmaster, because by the time you get done that evening, you've really worked out. It really is a workout. So it's an honor to be called spellmaster.
Do their kids not understand this and they think they're playing, you know, role play games and they're the spellmaster?
I really don't. Yeah, I don't know. See, yeah, we struggled with what to call it for a long time, spellmaster, because I just like that. My husband and my son are into fantasy board gaming, so it's like, that was cool.
But the spellmaster.
Yes. So, yeah, the spellmasters, it's fun.
And when do they need to take part? I mean, if this is coming up quickly, they need to get maybe online and get a registration form into you? Can they do it online, or do they have to do it in person?
No, the registration form, I can send it to you by email, okay. But you need to get a hold of me. And actually, in Huron County, the B is next Tuesday night. So
time is important.
Yeah, right away. And we can invoice for the registration fee and so on. So it's like you don't have to come up with that money like today just to register. Just give me a call, and we'll get you registered. And my number is a total. Free 1-800-843-6394.
And you need four people,
mm-hmm.
and preferably one who knows how to spell, and
preferably.
The others who know how to win and
who know
enjoy
how to say.
It.
Yeah, that looks good. Yep. I mean, you could do it with fewer people. We did have a team 1 year with five people. I don't really have any rule that says you can't have five people, but you have to remember that that's more people that have to agree. It didn't help them. It was more of a handicap than it was a benefit.
Really?
So, yeah, it was.
And where are we going to hold this in Huron County?
We're holding it at the Tech Center, and it's sponsored here in Huron County by the Daily Tribune and by the Huron County View.
And you basically show up that night. Is there spectators to this? Can people just come out and
anybody
and
can
it?
Come out and cheer them on and test yourselves, too. So I had a group last year that was watching, and they were testing themselves, and I believe they're going to, over in San Lac County, I think they're going to come and compete this year, because I think they thought they did well enough on their own. So,
well, the words could be totally different this year.
They are absolutely totally different this year. So, but, you know, they thought they were good enough, so hopefully we'll get them back. So, yeah, 7 o'clock that night at the Tech Center here in town, and it takes about an hour and a half. It really isn't a very long event. It moves right along because it's a timed event. So, you know, each word has got a certain length of time that you've got to spend on spelling it.
You don't use the Jeopardy music?
No, no, we could. That'd be kind of fun. But no, the way it works is the spellmaster calls the word, and then he tells you what type of speech it is, if it's a noun or a verb.
Does he use it in a sentence?
Mm-hmm, he uses it in a sentence and gives you a definition. And what I try to do is if it's a word that has two very distinctly different definitions, I try to give them both. Or usually I just use one if I can do that. So, and then you have 15 seconds from the time he says the word three times. And when he says the word for the third time, you've got 15 seconds to complete, to agree on how you want to spell it. So really you have maybe 25 to 30 seconds altogether from the first time that he says it. But you have to know when you're taking a test or when you're doing something like this, the first thing that you see in your head is almost always right. So you kind of got to go with that. It's when they start comparing is when they get into trouble.
You didn't see my school records, because the first thing that came to my head usually wasn't. That's a whole different story. But, it'll go fast, and depending on how many teams show up, maybe a little longer, a little, because mm-hmm. you've got to eliminate. and you got all these people paying $10 to keep on going.
Yeah, in the fourth round, there's no way to pay to stay back in. It's the only way. We start the words out, and if you spell it wrong, then you're done, and you actually get your official balloon popped by our official beekeeper. And we have a bee with a stinger that will come around and pop the balloon on your table, so you'll be done.
Well, that almost sounds cruel.
Might be. Might be. Might be a little. But yeah.
But you can come on out. Again, the registration's $100 a team. Mm-hmm. And many times you get corporate sponsors, so you can maybe work their name into your name, mm-hmm. and everybody's happy, and you can see how good a speller you are. Mm-hmm. And all the funds raised stay locally?
Yes. Yep. And they'll stay right in the foster grandparent program and RSVP programs.
So it's not one of these things where it goes who knows where, and maybe 28% of it comes back. Everything stays local.
Every
penny.
one of those
nice fundraisers locally where it stays local.
Yeah, it really goes into the parts of our program where we've lost the funding over the past few years. It keeps our programs alive, keeps it going.
And it allows you more flexibility because these funds don't come with the strings that some of the others do.
Correct.
I mean, if you see a need, somebody needs a little more gas money or something that
doesn't quite fit
the program. Mm-hmm. You've got the discretion to do things with this that you wouldn't with things that have to be totally accounted for.
Correct.
As far as all the federal or state dollars go.
Right, yep.
Well, I wish you a good time. I hope you get a lot of good spellers, because I hope by the first round they haven't all gone out.
We've only had a couple times where a team has actually gone out before the final round. They come prepared, and we will bill words out. So if you don't bring enough cash, we'll send you an invoice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
As long as you can spell invoice.
I got that.
Oh, okay. But again, if people have questions on the senior volunteer programs, they can call the HDC office, either the one locally in your county or the 800 number in the phone book in Caro, and they'll direct you to whoever in your area can help you get started.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
I appreciate you coming out. I hope you get a good turnout for your fundraiser, and I thank you for all the programs you're doing for the kids and to help the seniors at the same time.
Well, thanks so much for letting me be here and talk about this.
Our guest today on the program has been Julia DeGuys. She is the service volunteer manager for seniors, senior volunteer program manager at Huron, at the Human Development Commission. I see why I don't spell.
That'll be $10.
I can't get my wallet out. And again, if you have questions, contact the HDC if you want to volunteer for the programs, or perhaps if you know someone who could benefit from some of these programs, referral, tip them off, maybe somebody who could use someone coming over, or a kid who needs a little help here and there, they can steer you in the right direction.
Yep, thank you so much.
Coming up at the top of the hour, we will clue you in on all the latest in the news.